As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome to the Leaf Report. This is Clark here. Hello, everybody.
James, we're inching closer and closer to actual games that matter. Are you loving the preseason? Like, how great is this? So good.
Yo, how come? Why are there only six games? Why can't they just play?
Just like, 10,
why
don't, right?
Why don't they have an 82-game preseason and then just play, like, three regular season games?
Yeah, then I mean, just do the playoffs, right?
At least preseason's only six, right? Like, there have been other years where it's been eight or nine before.
Well, so I've been thinking, and maybe you can answer this. We have a lot to get into. We'll get into some cuts, and I want to play a game that I invented with you, and obviously we'll do the pod bag. But maybe you can answer this, because I've been thinking about it a lot just watching some of these games. How difficult do you think it is for teams in positions where, like, you really do have roster spots and all that kind of thing to decide when the games are like this? Like, I was at the game on Tuesday night, and shots were 34-7. And I was thinking, like, how do you make, like, that much of this? You know what I mean? Like, how do you decipher between what's real and what's, like, just some guys going through the motions and, like, AHL goalies? And you know what I mean? Like, it just must be hard.
You know what it seems to me has happened? I don't know if it's I want to say the last 5 or 6 years, but it seems like more and more teams now, because there's so many preseason games, they carry two full rosters. And
yeah,
for their road games, lots of times they just put, like, a total crap roster together and just, like, they don't even, they're just going through the motions. Like, they have to play those games because they make money for their team and their team wants to play those games. But that, like, yeah, I think if it was up to, like, Sheldon Keefe and Kyle Dubas and whatever, like, they don't need all these games. Like, you probably only need, like, three games for your real roster. And you want to see some of your kids play and stuff like that. The weird thing for the Leafs, I don't ever remember a year when the roster has been as set as it is. Like, there's just, we were going to do a story on, like, roster battles or whatever. Yeah. And it's like, there's no battles. Like, what's the battle that's happening? You know, it's like, they're so tight against the cap, they can only carry 21 players. There's not a lot of extra spots. I mean, it's up in the air who that extra player is going to be. But that's, if you read the story I just put on the site on Wednesday afternoon, it's like, well, basically there's one question mark that needs to be answered here before the season starts. And that's got to be, so really training camp's really about, you know, you get a look at some of these fringe guys, and when you run into injuries, then you've know a little bit more about them. But for the most part, you're trying to get the power play in sync and ready for the season, and you're trying to just get everyone's fitness level to where you want it to be, and then away you go.
Yeah, and I guess you're right. Like, it's not, you can see certain things. Like, Semyonov, for example, looks interesting. That it doesn't mean, like, he's an NHL player, but the preseason, he's looked interesting, and, like, they've used him in a lot of different ways. And obviously, as of now, when we're recording this, he is still on the roster. I can't see him being on the roster at the end. Like, you can't rule everything out, but I don't really think, to you to this point, any of the cuts have been surprising. Like, they've all just been kind of everything we expected. Like, you can run down, you wrote about it for The Athletic if people want to check that out about the latest cuts, but anything, like, about the latest group really stand out to you?
I thought maybe there would be a couple more cuts, to be honest. Like, they still have 27 players. Like, they are 17 forwards still on the roster. That's a lot. Do you think that that's maybe they just want to sneak those guys through on the last day of waivers when there's going to be like 800 billion of these guys available?
Like, I actually wanted to ask you that because I read your story and you mentioned like maybe they try to sneak these guys through on the last day, Monday, when there's like a lot of players, like you're saying, on waivers. And then I was thinking, well, is that the right day or is it, should you do it earlier? Like, do you think there is a right time or do you just have to kind of hope?
I think the last day makes sense because most teams will have like set their rosters by then. Whereas if you do it a day or two early, there's going to be fewer players on waivers. Teams are still like thinking about like their last few cuts. The only thing that could happen with waiting is there could be some injuries to someone and then all of a sudden teams need someone and they're going to be on the lookout to claim someone.
Well, isn't that what happened, like, go back a few years with the goalies? Weren't there injuries to some teams in goal, and that's why they claimed some of the guys?
Yep, for sure. Goalies are well, even, was it, it was last year, right, with the taxi squad and Aaron Dell, and they,
yeah, so right.
They tried to, like, outfox the other teams, and they held on to Aaron Dell for a little while, and then they, like, they were moving some things around and then they waived him. Whatever, I can't remember. It was like 2 weeks into the season or something. And he got claimed and because there were a bunch of teams that had injuries. And I mean, it's funny that there's like all these like maneuvers to keep someone like Aaron Dell who's like, I think he was on waivers today. You know, I think he got cut from Buffalo, I think today.
Really? With Buffalo's goalies, he got cut, eh?
He had a tough year. He had a tough year last year. The goalies aren't are...
isn't it Anderson and like...
Craig Anderson and... Tekarski? Dustin. Yeah, those are the going to be
Holy
the goalies.
Holy hell.
Yeah, I was just reading something about that on this little site called theathletic.com.
I wanted to ask you about your guy, or is he my guy? Pierre Engvall. So you mentioned in the story, and it's something you and I have debated, like would a team claim him? And I'm just like, look, I just pulled up while you were talking Arizona's roster and I'm just looking at their forwards and like, yeah, like you could make a case like he should be, he's better than Jay Beagle at this point in his career. Like, you know what I mean? Like he should in theory be claimed by a bad team if you put him through waivers. I mean, I don't think last year he qualified at that point to require waivers.
He qualified after he had played, I think it was 13 games. So,
but remember, he got cut to start.
Yeah. Because he...
Oh, but there was a taxi squad, right? No, he didn't make the taxi squad.
Yeah, but Jonas, he wasn't waiver eligible until he had played like another 13.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. They haven't faced this situation where like he could be lost.
He hasn't been on waivers before.
Right.
I just think with his size and his skating ability, and he's played a little bit of center, I think there's still a little upside there.
I do too.
So if I was another team, I would look at him for sure. But that's easy to say when you haven't seen the waiver lists for there's lots of decent players that, you know, there's guys that were first round picks like 3 years ago that are on waivers. And, you know, there's been some interesting names the last couple of days.
So what do you think happens? What's that saying, James? Like the simplest solution is usually the solution or something? The simplest answer?
The debate is, do you just keep Engvall on the roster because you don't want to lose him on waivers, or do you try and sneak him through on waivers? Like that's, to me, that's really the only debate. Because you're not going to lose. Semyonov and Liljegren don't require waivers to go down. So they're going to go up and down throughout the course of the year. So then you got to waive Adam Brooks, Michael Amadio, Curtis Gabriel, and Alex Biega. I don't think any of them are going to get claimed. I mean, maybe outside shot on Brooks.
I kind of feel like every team probably has a Brooks type.
Yeah.
But maybe. I mean, he's cheap.
So, like, really, like, the debate is with Engvall. And I think that they're going to need to carry an extra defenseman a couple of weeks into the season. So, the point might not really matter because you might just end up having to waive Engvall in 2 weeks. And at that point, he might go on waivers and there's, you know, other teams have injuries or they don't like the look of their guys. And there's not going to be a lot of other players on waivers. So anyway, that's the debate.
I think you kick it down the road. And I mean, you don't have to have a seventh defenseman when you go on the road. Like, it's not like they have any long trips. They have a 2-game trip. Or I guess it's three games.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
But I mean, if someone gets hurt, I guess it gets a little complicated. But if someone gets hurt, let's say, I think they play a Sunday night in Pittsburgh. If someone gets hurt, you can always rejig your roster, right?
Unless they get hurt, like that it's too late to get someone there, right? Like most teams, when they go on the road, they carry more than six defensemen because you don't want to have to play a game with five defensemen.
Yeah, but I guess I would counter, is it worth loot? Like, let's frame this a little bit, like from a zoom in perspective. Like Pierre Engvall is like a 12th, 13th, 14th forward, whatever. But like you can get into a situation where you have to use him. Like you look in the playoffs last year, he was on their third line. So like, do you want to lose him just so you can carry an extra defenseman on the road for a couple games? Like, maybe not. Like, I don't think so. But James, I did actually want to bring up before you respond. I thought it was interesting, like just listening to Keith talk about Engvall, talk about Brooks. Like those guys he knows probably better than anybody in the organization. Like he's had them from basically the beginning. And, you know, he said what he needs to see from those guys is separation, where it's clear that they're NHL players. And I think it's hard for someone like in the games that we're seeing for guys like that. Like to me, Engvall clearly looks like he's an NHLer in the way he skates, how big he is, like his versatility. I'm less sure about Brooks. Like I think he's more tweener-ish. But anyway, I don't know how much time we need to spend on Brooks and Engvall.
Well, that's kind of the decision that we're at with training camp. I mean, really. I mean, I guess you're probably right, though. Like, what's more important with this training camp is, like, how do the guys higher in the lineup look? How does the power play look? All of that stuff. But, you know, these are the cut decisions that have to get made. And I've actually, you know, like you mentioned Semyonov, I think that Amadio has looked fine. Like, I think that Brooks has looked fine. If all of these guys clear waivers, they've got a lot more depth at center. They've got a lot more options. And if they do run into injuries, I feel, like, relatively confident that they're going to be able to call up someone who's going to be a good contributor. And their level of depth is right now, the way that we have the lines is Richie, Matthews, Marner, Bunting, Tavares, Nylander, Mikheyev, Kampf, Kasha, Simmons, Kerfoot, Spezza. I mean, just the fact that Kerfoot has gone from, you know, being like a second or third line staple to he's playing on the fourth line, that kind of shows you that they've got a few more options at forward this year than they did last season.
Well, I think there's a little bit of like a misnomer, James, like that they are weaker up front. And I actually don't think that that's the case. I think Zach Hyman obviously is a big part of that idea, maybe, or conception, because he was such an important player. And obviously, no one they got is as good as Zach Hyman. But if like you look at some of the other pieces that they've replaced, like I'm looking at their roster like from the start of last year, and it's like they've got Thornton, and they've got VC, and they've got Barabanov, and they've got like
Boyd.
You know what I mean? Boyd, and like, and I just think like Kasha is like, Kasha, when you see him up close, you're just like, man, like this guy is good. Like this, like Sheldon Keefe pointed out, like you watch him and you're like, that is an NHL player, and you feel it. Like, and so I just think some of the other pieces, like they might be a little bit better. Like, I don't know. Like there's something about them that I think is different. Like you mentioned Kerfoot, like Kerfoot is now pushed down the lineup. We'll see what happens with Bunting and Richie and even Kasha, but I don't know. I feel like they might actually be a little bit better or the same. It just depends on like how much you value or you want to value Hyman versus the other guys that they had last year.
Yeah. Yeah. No, we'll see. I mean, they need Kasha to stay healthy. They need Bunting to like take a next step in his career and like show them he's an NHLer. They need Richie to be more than he's probably been in his career. They need David Kampf to be more than a guy that scores one goal all year. Like there's a bunch of ifs in there, but like on paper, it looks like that they could be stronger, deeper in the lineup.
Well, that is a good segue, James, for the game that I've created. Now, do you want to take a break and start playing the game, or do you want to get into the game and then take a break midway through?
I think I need a break to get ready to psych myself up for this game.
Psych yourself up. Go to the mirror, pump yourself up, put on some like, I don't know, Tool or some of that heavy metal music you listen to and get yourself ready. We'll take a break and then it's time for my special game.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Okay, James, this is my special game, and I think you and I are going to write some version of this week because I'm having fun with it. The game is called Convinced or Unconvinced. Are you ready?
I'm so ready, Jonas. This is making my week right here.
All right. I had so much fun with this. All right, convinced or unconvinced, James, Spencer Carberry's fresh take on the power play will prove sustainable.
I mean, it looks good so far. It looks like, you know, I like how much different it looks than what we saw last year and I think probably what we've seen the last couple of years. It looks like they're trying to be a lot more dynamic and move the puck quickly. I like the idea of Marner playing in the middle. So I'm going to say for, you know, you're not giving me another option, so I'm going to say convinced.
What would be like a between convinced or unconvinced? Sort of convinced?
I don't know. I'm like cautiously optimistic. It looks like they're on the right path. I mean, I think we've seen everything in training camp and preseason that you could want to see to say, yeah, I think the power play is going to be better than it was for most of last year.
Yeah, I guess the only thing you haven't actually seen is like the full unit in a game. And we'll see if Austin Matthews is able to play on Saturday. You may be listening to this on Saturday when it's decided whether he's in or not. But like you can see, the word that you mentioned on the podcast last week has really stuck with me, and that's chaos. Like you can just see that it stands to be more difficult to defend because the threats are kind of everywhere. Like you could conceivably now see anybody scoring and anybody shooting. Whereas last year, like it really just felt like they were always gearing up for the Matthews shot. Like nothing else really felt like a sustainable option. You know what I mean? And like the sustainability thing with their power play is like, it got stale as the past couple of years went along because it became so clear what they were trying to do. And now if you have like all these different threats, like Tampa, like Boston, I just think they're going to be harder to defend. So I'm with you.
The thing you want in a power play is it shouldn't need to be like an overpowering shot or like an unbelievable play that creates a goal. And some of the goals they've been scoring in the power play look like they're just like little flicks of the wrist in front of the net. And that's what like you want to have like the play that even the play that Tavares made where it was to Brendan Mennel and he just bangs it in from the point. You want to have like a lot of those little short passes and like deception and the goals that Nick Ritchie scored. It's not like he's like, it's not like he's hammering, you know, a one-timer top corner. And it felt like too often the power play last year, they were looking for the perfect play.
The Matthews shot, right? The one time.
Yeah. When like you just want to have like a lot of different options that who cares how pretty it is, right? Like, you know, you just want to have like some bang, bang passes that get the puck on net and get the goalie moving around the net and break the PK box open as much as you can. So
mm-hmm.
I like what they're working on. I bet you, I don't know if he's talked about this in camp. You've been around more than I have this year. I bet you Sheldon Keefe spent a lot of his summer like looking at different power plays around the league and thinking about what he wanted to do differently this year.
As he should. And I think he called that like the biggest priority of the offseason for the coaching staff. And obviously he put a new assistant coach new to the NHL in charge. But I think you're right. Like, and even just watching them at practice, James, like it's all quick, like and more direct and like quick strikes and like Tavares even feels, and again, this is just more practice, active. Like more active, like, yeah. And just like they're making a point of like getting him involved. And like, he's one of the better scorers around the net of the past decade. Like he should be used and Nylander should be used. And like, even Riley doesn't have the most dangerous shot, but just the threat of something different from the point where like, that's an option, makes a lot of sense. So next one, James, speaking of Riley, convinced or unconvinced, the Leafs will sign Morgan Riley to an extension, ... eventually. Huh?
I'm going to say unconvinced. I feel like the number is going to be too high for the Leafs to do it, but The only hesitation I have, Jonas, is that I don't know if they would have played it this way unless they thought that they could still get it done, if that makes sense. Like,
what do you mean?
I don't know if they would have waited unless they thought the possibility the door was still open to get the extension done. Like, I think they're going to still try to get it to extend him.
Well, the problem, there's many problems, but one of the big problems is now the price in theory has gone up because of some of the deals that were signed.
Yeah.
The sense I get, James, is like that this is going to be a long process if there is a process. And obviously, and I saw Elliot Friedman had in his 32 thoughts that like they're planning to kind of see how the year goes. But that to me, like I'm with you. I'm unconvinced. To me, that suggests like you get into a situation like they just went through with Zach Hyman, whereas if Morgan Riley has a really good year, he's probably going to be too expensive. And if he doesn't have a really good year, then you're probably looking at him and be like, yeah, we're probably not signing you to a long deal.
That said, so, if Riley really wants to stay, that's the wild card here. And from what I've been told, he does. So he's going to have to weigh what the difference in money is on the open market versus really wanting to stay.
We just went through this. I'm very sure Zach Hyman really wanted to stay. But when you're offered so much more money, like it's really hard to turn it down. And I was thinking like over the offseason, like how many players have really genuinely taken hometown discounts? And the only guys I could think of really recently are the Tampa guys. I'm obviously missing others, but you don't really see the hometown discount really be much of a thing anymore. And even those deals, like some of them are shorter, know what I mean? Like
I can see a world where the Leafs would go $7 million long term. And on the open market, I don't know how much more than that he's going to get. He's going to get more, but maybe it's not the same as Hyman, where it's not going to be like, you know, with Hyman, I think that the dollar per year value that Edmonton was willing to go over, what the Leafs are going to go over, was a lot. What's Riley going to get on the open market? Like 7.5, 7.7, 7.8, something like that. So
yeah,
All of a sudden, like the numbers are pretty close, right? Like if the Leafs are willing to go to 7.
Okay, but so answer me this question. You're better at this stuff than I am. Okay, so the cap is not going up, right?
It might go up. They think it's going to go up about $1 million next year.
Okay, so $1 million. So basically what you're telling me, Morgan Riley right now makes 5. Where are they going to get this extra money from? Jack Campbell's going to need a new contract. Like, how are they going to find more space?
The end of the Phil Kessel salary retention begins.
Oh, there you go. I guess that's one way.
There's your $1.2 million. They're finally going to be out of jail.
That's still not enough.
I'm joking.
You know what could happen? I mean, they might just get into a situation where they can't keep both goalies if Campbell has a good year.
No, they can't. Like,
yeah,
they need Mrazek to have a good year, not just because they want to have a good season, but also they want some flexibility that they're not stuck with that contract if they decide to move him.
Yeah, the 3 years is potentially tricky.
So I think you can make $7 million for Riley work.
It's effing tight, isn't it?
It's tight.
it's tight like a tiger.
Well, I mean, like maybe they want to wait to get into the season because they're going to think about maybe. They're thinking about there's some other pieces in the core that can move around, and they'd value Riley at 7 more than they value player X at 10.9.
That does not make sense. I'm sorry. He's like Mitch Marner is 24. Riley will be, I believe, 28 when this contract starts. I believe.
Yeah, I think that's accurate.
You can't.
Well, let me phrase it a different way. Maybe they value Riley more at 7 than they do Muzzin or Brody at 5,
yeah,
five-ish.
That's a more interesting conversation. Yep, that's a good conversation. Yep. Mm-hmm. And that makes some sense.
You could trade one of those guys and get like a really good asset back. I'm not saying I want to do that because like they're both Brody and Muzzin are great players.
This feels like this is going to be Zach Hyman 2.0 to me.
Yeah, but, I just think that the dollars might be a little bit closer than they were with Hyman. And I mean, frankly, it's probably easier to replace a winger than it is to replace a defenseman.
Yeah. Like, it's a very complicated situation because of the role he plays.
The other thing, Jonas, too, is I think with Riley, you can go the 8 years, and then that's like maybe you can bring the cap hit down with that. Like if you can give him, I'm just doing some, I got my little calculator out here. Like if you could do 6.8 by 8, that's 54 million. And then like, so if another team would have to offer, you know, quite a bit more. I mean, what's he getting on the open market? Like 7.6?
I bet some team will pay him 8. I don't know. Don't you?
Maybe. So
all you need is one. And like we've seen, there are some interesting, is a nice way to put it, front offices, right?
Well, so if someone gives him 8 by 7, that's 56 million. And if you give him 6.8 times 8, that gets you to 54.4. So like the money is basically the same.
Yeah, true. I mean, another question is it a good idea to sign him to that kind of contract? And I don't know if that is either.
I don't know.
We could probably do a whole hour on this, but we're in the middle of a game, James. Oh, so yeah. Okay. The next question in my special game, convinced or unconvinced, James, Ilya Mikheyev deserves a look in the top six.
This will be controversial, but I'm going to say convinced. I think I would give him I think I would give him a shot there, even if it's like 10 games or something.
Tell me why.
I think that if you want to get the most out of him you possibly can, you give him another chance. Because I think if you bury him, you might as well trade him. Like, you don't need like a he doesn't want to be like on a checking line that's in starting in the D zone every shift. He doesn't want that role. You might as well trade him.
That's interesting. You think he doesn't want that role, eh?
No. I mean,
he wants to score.
That's why he requested a trade. He thinks that he can produce offense in the NHL. He did his first half season.
Wow. So I'm unconvinced.
Well, I think most people are probably unconvinced. I think like,
I see what you're saying. You're saying basically you kind of need to coddle him a little bit and at least say, here, we gave you an opportunity. And then if it doesn't work, you're like, well, listen, bud, like we gave you 10 games. I don't know what to tell you.
I think my guess is, Jonas, I know I said that our mock roster had Bunting on the Tavares line. I wouldn't be shocked if Mikheyev starts there just to give him a run there to see if he can get back his mojo from his rookie season.
I'm unconvinced. I've kind of...
Were you ready to give up on Mikheyev?
I just don't think he belongs in that kind of role. I think I understand what you're saying, and I think it's a valid point, but I think what is best for the team is that he's on the checking line, because that's better, that's more aligned to what his skill set is. Like, he may think of himself as better offensively than I think he is. Like, I just don't see that in him. I don't see him making Tavares and Nylander better. I don't.
Yeah, and I mean, like, I think the skepticism is warranted based on how he played last season and what happened in the playoffs with him last year. But, you know, watching the Amazon series and seeing the way that just how down Mikheyev was and how, you know, the conversations he was having with Dubas, and it really, you kind of got the sense that he didn't want to be there. And then there's the trade request, and then, so they need to think about, like, do what they want to have this guy who doesn't want to be in that position playing there.
It's a good point, and I'm glad you brought that up. Apparently, so what, I don't know if we discussed this or not, but the way that worked in the office is, like, they had robotic cameras set up, so there wasn't, like, a big crew in there for any of those meetings. It was just, like, a robotic camera.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
So maybe that makes, in that sense, it's probably not as like performative as I had initially thought, because like the camera's just there and you probably don't even see it or you've probably forgotten about it most of the time. But the one thing with that doc, like you're mentioning, is like he looked fragile and like someone who was going through it. You know what I mean? Like, well, even the meeting with Dubas, like he looked like a player who's kind of a little bit like,
he's unhappy.
Yeah.
In the KHL, he was the best player on the team. He played power play. He played penalty kill. He played big minutes. You know, it's like, it's kind of like the player that comes from junior and is used to like playing in every situation, and then gets the NHL and you got to like, and I think that fans and you and, you know, everyone else commenting is warranted in saying that he hasn't earned that top six spot. I just think they might give him a shot there, one more shot there to, do you think like he was talking about the arm and everything and the injury and how his arm was in that position, and they started calling him the Cobra and everything. Like, I wonder how much of a factor that was last year.
In terms of his shooting?
Yeah.
and just everything, puck handling, yeah, like all
maybe,
that kind of stuff.
Maybe it's going to just take longer to, like, you know, what? My limited medical knowledge, when you get the tendons cut, it takes a long time to get back to where they were.
I think that's a valid point. I think that's fair. All right, let me read you some numbers. So this was his first year. He played 39 games, about 516 minutes. These are 5-on-5 stats. 6 goals, 15 assists, 21 points. Last year, James, 54 games, about 651 minutes, so more minutes. 7 goals, 7 assists, 14 points. And the first year, I believe his on-ice shooting percentage was 9%. And then last year was just under 7. I don't know if that helps you with anything. Reading stats on a podcast is probably not a great idea.
Oh, well, this podcast, we're all about it. I mean, I was using my little calculator on my computer while we were on the podcast earlier in the show. So it doesn't get more exciting than that.
How real did, like, that first half season actually feel to you? And how much of it did you feel like was just like he was a bit hot and lucky?
I mean, he looked really good. Like, he was getting, like, all of those chances, and I think that he just looked like a better player, to be honest. Like, I mean, some of it was probably, what was his, not just on-ice shooting percentage, what was his overall shooting percentage the year before versus, do you still have that in front of you?
So, yeah, I do. So, that's actually interesting. Year one, 5-on-5 only, 7.14%. Year two, 8.14%. Hmm. How you like them apples?
So, did he just generate way fewer shots then?
Yes. He had 84 shots the first year and only 86 last year. And that's with, like, significantly more ice time.
There's part of the problem, right? Like, he just looked like a different player last year than the first year to me. Like, remember how confident he was and just, like, he was, like, all over the puck and he looked a lot more dynamic for whatever reason. Maybe it was the arm. I don't know. And maybe, like, he's not going to be able to get that back. I don't know. But what I do know is that he does not look like a happy player. There was a trade request. You know, like, you're gonna put this guy with David Kampf in the defensive zone in every shift?
Yeah, but so the counter is, like, so, okay, so let's say you put Mikheyev with Tavares and Nylander, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I guess then the solution is you just go Kerfoot, Kampf, Kasha, and then you put Bunting with...
Yep.
Spetsen and Simmons.
Yep, that could work.
I guess. I'm on, like, obviously I'm driving the Michael Bunting bus. So, like, he'll be fine with that. Like, that's the thing. Like, you're probably more likely to appease everyone that way, at least to start, and then just let it play out. It's so tricky, though. It's like, then why is Richie playing ahead of Bunting? Because, like, honestly, Richie's not better than Bunting. Sorry.
Well, I think Kiefer said that this isn't settled yet, right? Like, he's still thinking.
Nothing is settled. Yeah. Like, that's the one thing we kind of get lost in these conversations is the way it starts is never the way it finishes. Like, it doesn't really matter how they start. So, are you ready for your next one? How many more do you want?
Well, if we're going to answer some questions from readers, we're going to be running thin.
Okay, last one. All right, this is an interesting one because we haven't talked about this player very much. Wayne Simmons still has enough to play regularly. Enough left.
Unconvinced. I think that he should... He's another one where, like, the first half of the season he looked good, and then after the injury he was not really effective at all. So, I think he should be on the fourth line. I think he should play...
He will be, for sure.
...no more than 8 or 9 minutes a game. And I think that he should sit, like, 20-30% of the games.
I also agree. I'm unconvinced. I think that 2-year contract could be, I mean, like, they can bury it, but he's such an, like, clearly an important player in their room. And so he's obviously had this great career. Those kinds of things can get awkward with with waivers and Marlies and, you know what I mean? Like, and it's a 2-year contract. Like, I don't know. Like, I think they may regret the 2-year thing.
What they need, Jonas, is not to be so tight to the cap that they can't even carry an extra forward. Like, that's too tight. Yeah. That's too tight in a situation like this.
Yeah, you're right.
And that's,
I guess we'll see. I guess we'll see how they handle it, because, like, we saw last year with Joe Thornton. Joe Thornton stayed in the lineup. Now he moved down the lineup and didn't play as much, but, like, they never scratched him.
He was on the top power play unit in the playoffs.
Yeah.
In game seven, passing the puck to no one.
I wonder, where is he playing in Florida? I haven't actually looked at the
they
Florida
had him
lines.
On the fourth line center, I think. He's with a couple young guys.
That makes some sense, I guess. All right. How did you enjoy the first round of convinced or unconvinced? Is it a hit?
I got to say, Jonas, I'm a bit unconvinced.
Wow. That was really good. I'm impressed that you did that. You spun it around.
You set me up.
I loved it. I had fun. All right. Let's come back. Let's take some questions on the pod bag. All right, James, it is your time to shine. I remind you to support your local restaurants. I'm going to go out to my favorite bakery, I think, in the next day or two. Although I have to go to Gravenhurst, but maybe on my way up, I'll go to my favorite bakery and grab a cinnamon bun. That's kind of my plan, roughly.
I think you have to name the bakery, Jonas, in order for this segment to be...
I don't want to ruin the... Like, I don't want anyone to know about it because it's like...
a giant lineup of people outside wanting to see you get your cinnamon bun.
No, actually, I'm just worried that it'll become even more popular than it is and it's going to take even longer because the lines can be pretty long. Go ahead. Take over. Pod bag.
I love our audience because I think we get the most minutiae questions ever.
Well, I think we are the most niche Leaf podcast there is. No?
Well...
Maybe not.
Chatty,
I guess not.
Chatty Campbell asks, who do you think the goalies in the AHL are going to be? Seems like they have four or five capable AHL goalies. I mean, Carlgren, I guess, will play down there.
That is as niche as it gets.
I told you. Hutchinson and Carlgren, I guess, and maybe Wall and Scott. Well, Scott's hurt, unfortunately. We wish him, hopefully he can get well. I don't know that they have four or five capable AHL goalies. Hutchinson and Carlgren will play a lot of the games for the Marlies. We've been asked a version of this before, but let's see if we have any changes in our... Marshall wants to know, where do you have the Leafs finishing this season in the Atlantic Division? Tampa, Boston, and the Panthers look really scary. What do you think the order will be? He says that's going to be the top four in the Atlantic. What do you think the order is going to be? You picked and we asked that for... where your team's going to pick, and you pick the Leafs to win the division.
Did I? I actually kind of think that that's what's going to happen. Here's why. I think Tampa, after back-to-back cups, I mean, I just think there's going to naturally be less motivation in the regular season. And guys are out. They've obviously gone through it physically. Boston, I don't think is as good as they have been in past years. And I'm not as sold on Florida as everyone else. Especially like in goal, I don't know what their goaltending situation is going to look like with Spencer Knight and Bobrovsky was bad last year. And I just think like the Leafs are A, really talented, and B, like they have a lot to prove. And obviously the regular season they know is not going to prove anything to people, but it's a really good place to get your running start. You know what I mean? Into the playoffs, just like last year, which obviously did not work, but they established like a lot of good habits in the regular season last year that... some of them did actually last. Like defensively, they were really good against Montreal. So that's my pick. What about you? So I'll go Toronto, Tampa, Boston, Florida.
I think that the Leafs on paper are the second best team in the division. So,
sure.
But I mean, I think that that's fair. Like Tampa's got quite a number of changes. They lost some good players.
That's the other point. They lost their second best line last year.
Yeah, Yanni Gord, you know, there's probably got to be some fatigue too. Like they crammed those two cup winning seasons in like pretty short succession. Like it was a short off season, both years. I still really like Tampa's team though. And I like some of the young guys that they've got that people haven't heard of. They're going to be coming into the lineup and playing more. I think they've got enough depth there that I would pick them. But the possibility is there for Toronto to win the division.
I think that should be their goal. I think they should try to win the division.
It should definitely be their goal. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think Boston and Florida are maybe a little bit overrated. I'm concerned with both teams in goal. I don't know what they're going to get in goal. I'm not a huge Linus Ullmark fan. And Florida, it's a real wild card with the kid, with Spencer Knight there and Bobrovsky. I mean... I like Florida's team. I really like, you know, bringing in Reinhardt. Their forward group is excellent. It's going to be fascinating. I'm really interested to see. But if I had to pick, I would say Tampa, Toronto, Boston, Florida is what I think is going to happen.
All right. So we're similar on that front. That's a good question. That's a really good question. I think the division, I mean, seeing it back together this year, eyeing the playoffs, I'm intrigued to see what it looks like after last year. Because like last year, we had that Canadian division question, like what's real, what's not. And that's gone now.
Steve LaRouche wants to know, do we think any of the players that they've put on waivers are they going to make it through, or could they get claimed? He asks about Menel, Joey Anderson, etc. Do you think any of those guys are Michael Hutchinson cleared today on Wednesday?
I had like a brief thought watching that Montreal game. Like, is someone going to claim Hutchinson? I mean, like, he's not the best, but I don't know. Some of the backups are on the league. Anyway, he cleared. Is anyone else going to get claimed? I don't think so. Do you?
I kind of like that Brennan Menel, but I don't know like that he had a big year in the KHL. He's not that old. He's a right shot. Well, look at some of the guys that have been claimed the last few days like for by other teams. It's like, who the hell is that guy?
It would depend on if some of these other teams see NHL players or potential NHL players. Like Joey Anderson's pretty young. He signed this year and next, I believe. For cheap, I don't know. Like, if you think he might be an NHL player, why not?
Well, that's the thing. You can't claim a guy and put him in the AHL. If you claim someone on waivers, you gotta put him on your roster. So he has to fit. The Leafs don't have room to carry extra players the way that a lot of other teams do. So like that, you could claim one of these guys and put them as like your extra guy. I mean, they're gonna have to waive better. The Leafs are gonna be waiving better players in a couple of days. So. Craig asks, do we think there's any chance to give Liljegren a chance next to one of their veteran defensemen? He's looked really solid in preseason. Seems time to see if he can be something in the NHL. There's not really a veteran to play him with. Is there? Like, you're not going to play him with Riley or Muzzin because you want those guys to play heavy minutes.
I don't think he will play with a veteran, but I can see a situation where he plays for one of... Maybe it's Sandin the odd night. Maybe it's Dermott the odd night. Like, I could see a situation. Again, it depends. Like, are they able to get into a situation where they can have an extra defenseman? But I could see that. You know what I mean? Like, where if they're carrying seven defensemen and one night, maybe it's a back-to-back, they plug him in. Like, maybe Sandin won't play every single game. I don't know. I guess it'll depend on how he plays. Well, like, I could see a situation where like it's midway through the year, it's January, he's worn down and they just slip him out for a game and play Dermott and Liljegren on the third pair. You know what I mean?
It's not like the Leafs are super deep on the right side. Like they have Brody, who's like kind of the mainstay, and then it's like Hall, Dermott on his offside, mm-hmm. Liljegren. Like if there's one injury on right D, Liljegren is in your top six. Because Riley, Muzzin don't play on the right side. I don't think Sandin will either. So like,
no, Sandin has. So they do have that flexibility. I mean, Biega played, 13 games last year? Not a lot, but.
Well, I mean, Liljegren.
I kind of like him.
Liljegren, yeah, he's fine.
He's old, but.
He's fine. He's like a, if he's on your team, he's only playing like 12 minutes a game or whatever.
Yeah.
Joshua wants to know if the goalies remain healthy, what do you think the games played split will be between them? I mean, it's going to depend who plays better, really. Like, if one of the goalies is clearly better than the other, then they'll get more starts. And if they're similar, they'll probably split the whole year.
I think it'll end up being like a 40-something to something like that, where they're pretty close.
Yeah, me too.
And then the interesting question will be the playoffs. Like, what if both guys are just like pretty good? And then, like, you have to make a decision for the playoffs. Then it gets kind of interesting. But then I guess you could just flip back and forth. Sorry to keep interrupting. Go ahead.
New year, new me, who is a return questioner, says, what player on the Leafs is the most interesting to talk to? Who's the most different in an interview versus in normal conversation?
That's a good question.
Who's the most different in an interview versus in normal conversation?
I've got an answer. Do you have an answer?
You go first.
Nylander, by like a mile.
Yeah, the interview, he's just death.
He's not great in interviews, but like he's like more interesting outside those situations.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah, as soon as it turns into, especially the cameras there or whatever, it's I understand. Like, I think, you know, if it was me, I would be much worse with like a camera in my face in like a formal setting than if I was just like talking. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's just human nature, right?
Yes. Well, some guys are really comfortable with it. Like, you can see Matthews is just fine. Doesn't care. Like, well, is just comfortable doing it, and other guys less so. Like, which
Matthews in the first year, it was like a bit unusual, and then he quit.
Well, he was like 19, wasn't it? Or no, he was 19.
So the first part of the question is, what player is the most interesting to talk to? I mean, I guess it depends. I find Dermot interesting. We haven't been around
Spicoli?
We haven't been around the players as much. Like, we're kind of, we haven't been able to like have conversations with them. I used to like talking to Zach Hyman a lot. I think I Matthews is interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I think my answer for that is probably Spezza. Just because like he is obviously such a knowledge for the game, and like he wants to talk about it. His thoughts on, like, he knows other players very well. Like, he knows what they do well. He knows what they don't do well. He knows other teams. Like, he's probably, I mean, how can you measure this? But like, he's got to be one of the bigger fans who's actually playing in the NHL.
He's also just seems like, good. Like what you see on TV and whatever, he just seems like such a wonderful person. Like, you know, what I've gone to Spezza and I'm working on this story. It's about so-and-so and whatever. He's like, oh, okay. And like, you know, he just is helpful. And I don't know. After talking to his dad for the story I did during the playoffs last year, it's like I can see where he gets it from. Like, they're just very, very, very like kind and generous people.
Good answer. Okay, what else?
Here's a good question. Wally wants to know, do you think Josh Hosang will play for the Leafs at some point this season?
You can answer that first if you want.
Boy, there's a lot of guys in front of him. I'm going to say yes, he gets into at least some games.
I'm going to say no.
Yeah, there's a lot of players in front of him. Like, we just talked about the logjam. There's going to have to be a bunch of... He's going to have to be really good with the Marlies, and there's going to have to be a bunch of injuries.
Well, and his role would have to be pretty specific. Like, they would need an injury. But they would need an injury, basically. I guess you could play him on the fourth line and play him on the power play, but, like, he kind of needs the right opportunity, and, like, the guy... Are you going to give, I guess you'll just give it to the best player, but I was going to say, like, are you going to give an opportunity to him over, say, Nick Robertson? Maybe. Yeah. Like, if Robertson is still kind of finding his way, maybe. I just don't see it, but maybe.
Conrad wants to go back to the Riley situation. He says, given that Riley will likely walk at the end of the season, can the Leafs really rely on an aging Jake Muzzin to play this well going into his mid-30s and pray that Rasmus Sandin can play in the top four? Feels like a repeat of some of the other UFAs that have walked. I mean, we talked about that a little bit, but there is a lot resting on the D that are getting older. Part of what concerns me is that, you know, they had this good regular season last year with a core that has some older pieces in it, that it's going to be hard for them to be that good year after year after year.
Well, so after this year, Muzzin will have 2 years left at 5.625. Is that tradable?
Yeah, it's probably heavily front-loaded, that deal, too.
So it's probably tradable.
There's hardly
tradable.
Anything left after you pay the bonus on the third year, if I remember correctly. And he went into the signing of that contract knowing that he might not be in Toronto the whole way through. Like, I don't think it has a no-move or a no-trade in it.
I remember reacting to that signing at the time and just thinking, being a little wary about those third and fourth years, because he is getting older and he's had injuries.
A lot of injuries. Yeah. Then he wears
the past couple years.
I don't know if they showed it on the dock or not, but he has these knee braces that look like they're like from that movie Elysium or whatever, where like the guy had like a bionic spine.
I never watched that movie. All the reviews were like that it was shit.
It was okay.
It's just okay.
It was okay. I would still watch it, but I like that kind of a movie. I mean, I've seen the Venom movie like many, many times, and the reviews on that one weren't very good.
Yeah, I won't. That's not for me.
What? Come on. The sequel's out in theaters right now. You got to come watch it with me.
I've seen the previews. Like, no.
Woody Harrelson is Carnage.
Yeah, I like Woody Harrelson as a bad guy. I'm intrigued by that. There's just a lot of stuff to watch, though.
Well, Venom is now on Netflix if you ever... What do we got? How much time do we got? One or two more?
I think we got one or two more.
There's a lot of questions about Mikheyev being on the second line. I feel like we've talked about that a lot. That's part of what I'm trying to avoid, is just like bringing up what we've talked about already.
I appreciate that.
This is a good question. this person's Twitter name is Trade Kerfoot While You Still Can. I think they've asked a question in the past. Would it make sense to move Kerfoot? Seems like there are slightly worse but way cheaper options they could use at on the third or the fourth line. Like, does it make sense to? If there's a use for that cap space, then I think maybe you want to create that room. I mean, maybe trading Kerfoot in midseason makes sense if you feel really good about what your other forwards are doing, and then you'll have a bunch of space that you can trade it, use at the trade deadline.
I don't know. I like having the option of him in case you need him. I just don't. So you're trading him basically for nothing in all likelihood, right? Like, you're not trading for anything of significance. So then the idea would be to take that cap space and use it later. But like, that's an unknown, right? I don't know. I guess maybe it allows you build some cap space and maybe you can trade for a better player. Maybe. I just think the option of him is helpful, as you saw last year in the playoffs.
All right. Last one for this week. Buds Outsider asks, do the Leafs take a look at Arendelle as their number three goalie after getting waived by Buffalo?
Well, you know, you can explain the problem with that, James, claiming him.
Yeah, you can't. He has to be on your roster. Like, you can't claim a guy and then put him on your AHL team. That's one of the stipulations with waivers. So the Leafs don't have extra cap space to carry a third goalie. I mean, I guess they do if they don't carry an extra forward or an extra D and they just want to carry three goalies. But it's,
they love Aaron so much.
Well, Arendelle did, you know, they were trying to hold on to him last year, but he didn't have a very good season, and his value is not where it was last year when there was all the talk about him being on waivers and losing him and all that.
Hutch outplayed him. How about that?
Yes.
Who would have thought?
So there, you know, I was with you. I thought that maybe there would be a chance that they would lose Hutchinson on waivers. So that's like a small win for the organization that he cleared, and they've got someone who played really well as a number three last year there in the pipeline.
Well, like, it's not the biggest deal, but if he got claimed, like, who would their number three goalie
be?
They'd
have to try and find someone else. Yeah. You know, you're right. I mean, I guess it's Colgren.
I guess. And it's like, but then like you start thinking, well, like, does the number three goalie, like, if they're down to their number three goalie for a significant period, they're in tough no matter what. But it's obviously better to have someone who's played some games who's okay than not.
Oh, Buds Outsider has one more question for you to close it out. He says, what's the over-under on the amount of times Spicy J uses the word spicy in an article before the end of the season?
I'm just going to do, like, can I do like 25 times? Just use it every line?
Well, then you'd be the under, because he says 54 is the over-under.
Oh, I love it. I should try.
I'm going to have to tell our guests to make sure they take them all out.
You got to give them another word that they plug into that.
Hey, Julian, do you edit any Jonas stories? Another word that they plug in? Okay, I'll come up with something even more ridiculous.
Oh, I'm going to start thinking. All right. Well, so if you haven't signed up for The Athletic, go to theathletic.com/Leaf Report. You can listen to the podcast on The Athletic app if you want. It's great, easy to use. Our app just like keeps getting better and better and better all the time. It's kind of nuts.
Well, the good thing about listening on the app is you don't have to listen to the ad reads, which, you know,
are amazing.
Yeah, you are missing out if you don't get the ad reads, but that's just... I use Spotify for my podcast. That's what I... And we are on there, so sign up there if you like.
All right. And so next week, James, we'll be back before the season starts. Season starts on Wednesday. And then they play Thursday as well. So we'll have lots to talk about. We got a lot going on, a lot coming at The Athletic to read and enjoy.
Pitter patter, let's get at her, Jonas. I'm ready for some real games that mean something. Or at least they mean more than preseason games anyway.
Thank God. Die, preseason, die. All right, James. We'll talk next week. Goodbye.